Welcome to Wider Europe, RFERL's newsletter focusing on the key issues concerning the European Union, NATO and other institutions and their relationships with the Western Balkans and Europe's eastern neighbourhoods. I'm RFERL Europe editor Rickard Joswiak, and this week I'm drilling down on the 50th anniversary of the Helsinki Final Act, the defining moment of Cold War detente, and asking whether the OSCE has a viable future. 50 years after the Helsinki Final Act, can the OSCE stay relevant? On July 31st and August 1st, hundreds of officials and politicians gathered in Finland to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Helsinki Final Act. That agreement was something of a high watermark of Cold War detente, with 35 countries, including the Soviet Union and United States, agreeing on numerous principles aimed at reducing tensions and building cooperation between East and West. The agreement was made after 2 years of talks known as the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, CSCE, and would shape the geopolitical architecture of the wider European continent. It laid the foundation for what became the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, after the fall of the USSR. At first glance, there should be a lot to celebrate. And Finland, which fittingly took over as OSCE chair at the start of the year, played it big. On July 31st, both Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres gave keynote speeches in Helsinki, followed by a variety of high-level panels debating the future of the OSCE under the theme Respect, Respond, Prepare. The Finnish chairmanship also used the opportunity to launch the Helsinki Plus 50 Fund, an initiative aimed at boosting voluntary funding for the Vienna-based organisation. Yet many are asking whether the OSCE still serves its original purpose. A grand bargain. Back in 1975, it represented something of a grand bargain between the democratic West and the communist East. The Helsinki Final Act was celebrated in Moscow as it affirmed the status and inviolability of the existing borders in Europe at the time. It meant continued Soviet dominance of the Warsaw Pact countries and de facto, if not de jure, recognition of the annexation of the Baltic states. But it also created three so-called baskets of future East-West cooperation: political and military affairs, economic and scientific cooperation, and, perhaps most significantly, human rights. While the Soviet Union thought it had won at first, it was in fact the West that came out better in the long run, not least due to that third basket, which prompted an international human rights movement across the Cold War divide. It inspired the Solidarity movement in Poland, the Baltic Way in Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania, and Charter 77 in Czechoslovakia, movements that helped pave the way for the fall of the Iron Curtain and the dissolution of the Soviet Union. With the creation of the OSCE in the 1990s, that third human rights basket was expanded to include things such as the protection of national minorities, press freedom, and the Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights, ODIHR, which to this day sets standards for election observation missions. In a letter to the 57 OSCE member states seen by RFERL, Finnish OSCE Ambassador Vesa Häkkinen invited them to the Helsinki celebration and wrote, "The Helsinki Final Act took a novel approach to managing tension and preventing conflict by setting out a comprehensive set of agreed principles and commitments to guide not only relations between states, but within them." 50 years later, the OSCE's principles and commitments remain a vital part of the European security order. Whether that remains true is increasingly debated, problems piling up. The need for consensus in the organisation has highlighted its shortcomings, especially as a seemingly revanchist and resurgent Russia has tested the entire post-Cold War structure for several years. The OSCE mission in Georgia was not prolonged in 2009, a year after Russia's invasion of the South Caucasus Republic. Moscow's subsequent recognition of the Georgian breakaway regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia further undermined the organisation. When Russia forcibly annexed Crimea in 2014 and occupied parts of eastern Ukraine later that year, Moscow first permitted a limited OSCE monitoring mission, but this was then terminated completely not long after the full-scale invasion in early 2022. Three former monitoring mission staff members have remained in illegal Russian captivity since then, with the OSCE making scant progress in getting them released. This has also prompted other nations to dismiss some of the organization's established mechanisms. The OSCE Minsk Group, created to find a peaceful resolution between Armenia and Azerbaijan over Nagorno-Karabakh, was rendered useless after Baku seized the entire territory in 2023, and Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev openly called for the group to be disbanded. As a result, the OSCE budget remains stalled, with Azerbaijan withholding approval until all Minsk-related institutions are removed. Despite this, there is no real discussion in Vienna about suspending Russia, or any other country for that matter. Instead, several OSCE officials told RFE/RL that dialogue and open channels of communication between all participating states remain essential. This was underlined again by OSCE Secretary General Feridun Sinirlioglu when addressing the crowd in the Finnish capital. If there is one lesson that we can draw from the spirit of Helsinki, it is this: dialogue is always possible. Russia was not even mentioned in his speech, and instead he offered up the idea that it was not only Moscow to blame. We all bear responsibility for mistakes, misinterpretations, hubris, and indeed silence. A meaningful security discussion will need to include an honest assessment of what we did wrong. Frustration with the consensus rule. In preparing for the Helsinki meeting, the Finnish delegation to the OSCE sent out an invitation to all countries to engage in small group discussions throughout the spring to tackle questions such as how to hold each other accountable, whether there is a minimum level of trust needed in order for the OSCE to function, and whether the organization can be a bridge builder. In June, a new Finnish letter seen by RFE/RL was sent out summarizing the discussion, and it is evident that there might not be much change, if any, going forward. One of the conclusions was that while desirable, trust is not a requirement for dialogue. Another, seemingly contradictory, finding was that participants confirmed the continued validity and importance of the OSCE principles and commitments, even and especially as they are being violated most severely by Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine. On accountability, there was even an admission that the OSCE cannot enforce compliance with its principles. The letter also notes that many expressed frustration with the consensus rule, but also added that many clearly feel strongly that consensus is the essence of the OSCE and an important guarantor for inclusive decision-making. Not surprisingly, the document concludes that this is not the time for major reforms. Nevertheless, most participants called for small, incremental adjustments to enable the OSCE to better perform its core functions. A political show. Despite the relative mild messaging, Russia seemingly dismissed the initiatives. In a letter seen by RFE/RL sent to the Finnish OSCE delegation ahead of the Helsinki meeting, Russia's OSCE ambassador Alexander Lukashevich noted that the overall impression is deeply disappointing. Contrary to expectations that Finland, a country that once made a significant contribution to the launch and development of the Helsinki process, would rise above the current divisions and propose a strategic vision for strengthening security architecture across Euro-Atlantic and Eurasian space, what we are offered instead is just another political show. He added that it will likely focus narrowly on just one of the regional crises within the OSCE area of responsibility, hardly contributing to easing today's international tensions. No Russian minister was present in the Finnish capital, neither in the room or online, and Lukashevich sent his deputy Maxim Bujakevich instead, a coalition of the willing. With these types of obstacles, the future of the OSCE might instead rest on a coalition of the willing formed to circumvent vetoes, as seen across many other international institutions in recent years. One such move was the OSCE Secretariat's Support Program for Ukraine, SPU, a portfolio of extra-budgetary projects. The idea appeared at the end of June 2022, when Russia blocked consensus on the extension of the OSCE Project Coordinator in Ukraine, a full-fledged OSCE field operation that had been active since 1999. Then there is the increased use of the OSCE Moscow mechanism, which has been triggered 5 times since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine 3 years ago, most recently to document alleged Russian crimes against prisoners of war and civilian detainees. With no consensus needed to be activated, the mechanism's fact-finding missions by experts and subsequent reporting will prove useful in various courts, notably the recently established Special Tribunal for the Crime of Aggression against Ukraine. Whether these workarounds can keep the OSCE relevant will be debated long after the Helsinki anniversary events conclude. Looking ahead. There's not much happening in Brussels in August, so no EU or NATO meetings are expected this week. But do look out for the swearing-in of the new Polish president, Karol Narocki, on August 6th. The conservative historian upset the odds by beating the liberal Warsaw mayor, Rafał Trzaskowski, in a tightly fought contest on June 1st. Read more about what his ascent to power will mean for Poland and Europe at large here. That's all for this week. Feel free to reach out to me on any of these issues on X at Rekha Joswiak or on email at joswiakr@rfrl.org. Until next time, Rekha Joswiak.